You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There is a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for September 25th, 2015. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live, floating down the Boehner River of Tears, it's The Professional Left with Drift Glass and Blue Gal. Hey, Blue Gal. How you doing?
I'm all right. You know, I don't want to make fun of John Boehner for crying because I love to cry, and I cry all the time.
Yeah, you cry for the right reasons, though.
Well,
because someone hid your gin.
I only got one rusty nail before the Pope's speech. Uh-huh. It made me a little weepy. No, I'm just making fun of the fact that Boehner blew his nose during the Pope's prayer.
Yeah.
On the speaker's balcony. Yeah.
Well, he made a bet with Eric Cantor. I'll give you $100 and a job. And as soon as your caucus tosses your orange ass out, I'll get you a job at my lobbying firm if you blow your nose during the Pope's prayer. Deal, Cantor. Ah, fuck you. I did it. Yeah. Boehner. And Boehner's been working. Apparently, Boehner's been working a long time to get like 20 years to get a pope to talk to Congress. This is a high point of his career. And wouldn't you know it, he gets the liberal one.
He gets the liberal one. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about that. Let's start with that and then move on to the rest of our agenda.
Oh, as far as I'm concerned, this is all Bible bitch all the time today. Because this is, you know.
Well, religion has just come up so much this week. I've really been trying to find items that don't relate to religion is harder than finding those that are.
It's like there's Sharia law in this country.
It's like there's Sharia law in this country. Well, I found it interesting that, you know, I watched the Pope's speech this morning. It was kind of hard to understand. English is not his first language. But, you know, minus abortion, the Pope and Bernie Sanders essentially gave the same speech.
Yes, they did. Yeah.
Bernie Sanders at Liberty University, which a couple of people wrote to me and said, you haven't talked about that yet. And they were surprised. I said, the debate got in the way last week, but definitely wanted to talk about that. And Bernie Sanders pretty much opened up a speech with the Golden Rule. And so did the Pope.
Yep.
And it's interesting to me that the idea of talking to people who disagree with you and being being civil to one another. Famous Catholic pole Chris Matthews was on before the Pope's speech this morning.
Yeah, you told me about this. Yeah,
and was asked about, you know, it was great. Back in my day, there used to be civility in Congress, and people would ask about your wife and your weekend and get along
and your mistress and how
even if you were not, even if you didn't agree and had hot under the collar disagreements and debates in Congress, you'd still have civility and get along with each other. As human beings, and not Sam Donaldson. I always want to call him Sam Donaldson. The host was
Brian Williams.
Brian Williams, thank you. Uh-huh.
The recently redemed
and let out of the penalty chastened box.
Jason
Brian Williams asked him, "Well, when did this start?" And I kept saying, "Okay, Newt Gingrich. You're going to say Newt Gingrich, right? You're going to say Newt Gingrich." And he said, "Well, I think the Vietnam War was when this all went to pot."
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, you have been hanging around David Brooks way too long to blame the hippies for incivility in Washington.
Yeah. That's the safe go-to answer.
Yeah.
The 60s.
The 60s, which everything went to pot. Yeah.
Well, and there was nobody there because there never is. There can't be. To say, no, isn't your fondest recollection the times that drunk Tip O'Neill and drunk Ronald Reagan would get drunk together and then, you know, hash out compromise. Now, let me get this straight. That happened after the Vietnam War, right?
Right.
So there was a period, at least in your mythology.
An era of good feeling, right? No, yeah.
Which, because Reagan, oh, you gotta love Reagan.
Yeah. Well, and that's it. Reagan got along with everybody. That's why, because he was a better person than anybody. He's our personal Jesus.
Of course. But this is Chris Matthews' personal mythology.
Yeah.
And his personal mythology is, well, Vietnam screwed everything up and everything's been going downhill ever since, except, of course, for this long period when I was working there. And then everything was great because Reagan. Well, okay. Even accepting that, what happened after Reagan and Tip O'Neill both retired? What happened then? And that's the part that nobody wants to talk about.
Yep.
And that nobody's there. And they make sure no one is on hand to say, what about Newt Gingrich? Your colleague, Newt Gingrich. Your broadcast buddy, Newt Gingrich.
Yeah.
Of course, that's never going to get asked because the answer is...
But getting back to the Pope.
Yes.
I don't want to miss all the points we have to say about the Pope.
Uh-huh.
I love this tweet from David Roth. Not David Lee Roth, it turns out.
You sure?
I'm sure.
All right.
David Roth on Twitter said, in my opinion, the Pope is definitely speaking divinely ordained words when he says things that align with my personal politics.
So true. So very true. Mm-hmm.
I just want to caution those who want to parse this out, you know, say, yeah, but the Pope may give a good speech about income inequality, but he's such a sexist when it comes to abortion, or he's so backwards when it comes to women's rights, or the church is this, the church is that. Don't forget, we're talking about the Roman Catholic Church.
Right. Right.
Step away from the nun is what I always say to people. People used to try to parse out what Mother Teresa was saying. Oh, yeah, she's great on poverty, but. And it's like, look, you can either go along with everything the Catholic Church says or not. No, you're an adult. You can agree and disagree. This is what Bernie Sanders was trying to say at Liberty University, which is he came out swinging at the beginning of that speech. I am for women's rights. I am for women's rights over their own bodies. I am for changing the income inequality problem in this country.
Mm-hmm.
You and I are going to disagree about a lot of things,
mm-hmm.
but... that doesn't mean we can't have a conversation. And so I think we need to embrace the areas where the Pope is right. And the Pope says, don't call me a liberal. I am teaching Catholic doctrine here.
Yes.
Care for the poor. So he's not trying to, as everyone on Fox News has said, oh, it's so political.
No. No.
No, he's not. He's not political at all. He's
You know that Bible that they used to swear you in?
Trying to follow Jesus.
every single one of you, with a couple of exceptions, has been sworn in on the Bible.
Yeah, well, and across the top of this is the thing. Right. Separation of church and state, folks. I totally get people barfing a little in their mouths watching the speech this morning because there is In God We Trust and carved into the wall of the House of Representatives chamber. You know, it's just, it doesn't belong there.
No, and it doesn't.
The Pope can speak to us as the head of state of the Vatican and, you know, he, as Pope, give moral guidance in his speech. He's free to do that.
Uh-huh.
But separation of church and state is what this country was founded on.
Oh, well, yeah. No, my point was simply that the people who don't want the Fox News Republicans, who are mad the Pope's getting political,
yeah,
and who are protesting or who are just turning their nose up because what business does this person have coming to our government and getting political with his all liberal up in my grill? First of all, you didn't have a problem with Bibi Netanyahu coming to this
right
country and openly lobbying for the Republican Party.
Yep.
Secondly, you people run your entire political lives on a mountain of Bibles.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
open one up sometime randomly in the New Testament. And I guarantee you, 3 times out of 5, it's going to fall open to a page where the guy with the long hair who cares for the poor is saying, here's what you should do.
Mm-hmm.
You should give up everything you have and give it to the poor. If you're not focusing on poor people and the disadvantaged and children and the sick, then you have no fucking idea who I am or why I'm here. That's about as political as you get. And that mm-hmm. is in the book that you take your oath of office on every 2 goddamn years if you're in the House and every 6 years if you're in the Senate. Unless, of course, you don't take it on the Bible. All I'm saying is these are bad Christians.
Yep.
People who hold their nose and go, in the Pope said something, why does he like capitalism? It's because he's the fucking Pope.
Yeah.
And his owner's manual is the Bible. It's not mine, But I'm not the one walking around all day showing the Bible in one hand and a cross in the other and proclaiming myself politically superior to you are. Mm-hmm. So let's look at the book that you carry around everywhere you go, and let's see what it actually says about the issues you care about. And then let's talk about politics.
Yep, yep.
Anyway, I got on my high horse, and I shouldn't do that.
I also wanted to point out that, for crying out loud, the Pope addressed atheists from the speaker's balcony.
Yes.
If you don't pray, or if you do not have faith and you don't pray, please wish me well. And that's as far out from a pope as I have ever heard. I think as anyone has ever heard, recognizing that people are not everyone in the United States or anywhere is going to follow his faith, but we can have reasonable good wishes for one another. I thought that was wonderful. So,
and that's really why I am steamed, a little pissed that nobody mentions Newt Gingrich.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's really simple, because Newt Gingrich taught people who were predisposed to think this way anyway, who'd had a lot of priming for 20 years to think this way anyway, that anyone who disagrees with them about anything is a monster and a traitor and an enemy and hates this country and wants to destroy everything they hold dear. And that compromising with these people, meaning us, for any reason, is tantamount to treason.
Yep.
And that's become the Republican Bible. Yep. And you cannot run a country that way. You cannot run a country that way. And so it is, I believe, incumbent on the people who were occupying the space in front of the camera to say, look, if the Pope can come here and say nice things about atheists and say, you know what, there's, and imply or state clearly there are places where we can work together, then why the fuck can't you? What is it that is so awful about your neighbor who has a D after his name? And the answer is they've had Rush Limbaugh shitting in their skull for 25 years. They don't believe in reality anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They don't believe in objective facts anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They believe in what Fox News tells them and what Fox
News. Except I want to say something about that. I want to interrupt you there, because Shep Smith, who I realize is so often the exception over at Fox News.
He is, yes.
But he gave the best explanation of what the Pope's speech and what the Pope's presence here is about. And I have the quote here.
Please.
He said, I think we are in a weird place in the world where the following things are considered political. Five things, I'm going to tick them off. These are the five things that were on the Pope's and our president's agenda. Caring for the marginalized and the poor. That's now political. Advancing economic opportunity for all. Political. Serving as good stewards of the environment. Protecting religious minorities and promoting religious freedom globally. Welcoming and integrating immigrants and refugees globally. And that's political? I mean, I don't know what we expect to hear from an organization's leader like the Pope of the Catholic Church, other than protect those who need help, bring in refugees who have no place because of war and violence and terrorism. These seem like universal truths that we should be good to others who have less than we do.
Well,
and he got that exactly right.
And the reason they have less than you do, Blue Gals, because they're bad people. They're lazy, immoral, shiftless, bad welfare queens.
Well, they're moochers. Yeah, this
who
is
mooch
the
off of us. And if you encourage them with,
it's just going to increase your taxes, Driftglass. If we take care of the poor, that means your taxes are going to go up.
The only thing that happened after the fishes and loaves was taxes went up. And the moochers took over the Roman Empire.
Mooching class.
That's just history. That's just history. Yeah. The moochers and the loafers.
So, Driftglass.
So, Blue Gal.
I wanted to talk to you. We had an interesting conversation after dinner last night when the kids escaped the dinner table.
Yeah.
There's a moment. We had a pretty good conversation last night at dinner, but
we usually do, yeah.
There is a moment where they're done eating and they just like, may I be excused?
They chew through the straps and
absolutely chew through the straps and go off to their phones or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And you and I usually linger a little bit.
We do.
And you had an interesting kind of multifaceted diamond, I thought, that included Volkswagen, the AIDS drug, Trophy Arena, and the EPA.
David Brooks. Smack in the middle of that.
Yeah. So talk to us about this jewel.
Well,
first of all, let me go through these stories.
Uh-huh.
Volkswagen actually cheated on emissions testing by creating a software within their cars that would cheat the EPA regulations on emissions on their sporty diesel cars. Okay. The chairman of VW has resigned over this.
Right.
This is not just, well, we're going to falsify information. No, we're going to create our cars so that they override the regulations.
By design.
And cheat. By design.
They cheat by design. Uh-huh.
Okay. This young hedge fund guy, buys the rights to a drug that saves lives. And the price goes from what, $1,750 to $3,500, something like some ridiculous amount of money. Mm-hmm. And then he goes on an interview day, meeting with the media and saying, oh, you know, this is about innovation and providing, and people aren't actually going to pay this money. I'm getting it from the insurance companies, and it's going to create more innovation in the drug world to make a profit margin that encourages people to invest in innovation in the drug world. Yeah. Okay.
Exactly.
Donald Trump has taken on Fox News and told everyone to boycott Fox News.
Yes.
This is peak Trump. This is just
unbelievable. And it is useful for those of us who live outside the Fox information sinkhole, or black hole from which knowledge cannot escape.
Mm-hmm.
To observe how Donald Trump is to Fox News as Fox News is to real news.
He
is simply applying the Fox News principles, which Roger Ailes has applied successfully to the dumb fucks and no necks and meatheads, who are his core voters and the Republican base, for decades. And Donald Trump is simply applying those principles successfully to Fox News. Calling them out every time they say a mean thing about him, or what he perceives to be a mean thing, which is Fox News' business model. He is attacking them when they don't report on him the way he wishes to be reported, which is the Fox News business model. He is telling Fox News viewers to ignore facts, ignore reality, ignore what I said on tape yesterday. That doesn't count, which is what Roger Ailes trained an entire generation of morons to do. And so they are at a loss. And they keep circling around because they're the same creature. They're just fighting over who gets control over the morons. And so watching Trump do, and Trump is in essence another greedy, thick-fingered mogul, another vulgar capitalist who's a loudmouth asshole who is also very successful. So we have VW, we have the AIDS drug, we have loudmouth asshole capitalist number one, who's being trailed very closely these days by Carly Fiorina, who is a destroyer of companies, Carly Fiorina, who is extremely good at lying through her teeth about everything to a media that does not want to make her mad or challenge her on anything, and whose claim to fame is wrecking companies. Everything she touches turns to shit. All the political advising she's done was for people who lost. So go down this list. What do all these people have in common? They're all capitalists.
Yeah.
These are the Republican heroes. This is their pantheon.
And someone, Chris Hayes, pointed out that really the VW story should make Republicans just happy dance in their pants because we stuck it to the EPA, right? That's what you're supposed to do.
This is who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And David Brooks wrote a long simpering column about how awesome the Pope was this week. So there's nothing much there. But if you comb back through last Friday, you will find that the person he thinks really can sort of rise to the surface and defeat evil capitalist Trump is evil capitalist Carly Fiorina.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And David Brooks let fly with a sentence that explains exactly why he has a job for life at the New York Times. Because he said, making fun of Donald Trump's absolute moral black holishness, the mm-hmm. absolute moral absence that Trump brags about buying politicians as if he's buying property, and that's the exception in business, Blue Gal, because David Brooks tells us that one of the things that's interesting to me about Trump is 99% of business people are people of business, but also people of honor. And so they don't check their values or their principles at the door when they do their business deals. And I know lots of small business people for whom this is true, but the people that David Brooks hangs out with are the Davos people. And because he has his mouth firmly wrapped around their dicks, and because he tells Upper East Side billionaires the fairy tales they want to hear, like they're good people. Lloyd Blankfein is a good man. And the bankers are just misunderstood. And really, capitalists are just wonderful people who have great principles. Well, they do have principles. One of their principles is that the weak should perish. And so, in theory, the heroes of David Brooks's fictional American narrative are the noble business people, which is exactly what Ayn Rand writes about. But in practice, the people who you see exploiting the system is the asshole who buys an AIDS drug and uses his ownership of that drug to squeeze people who are dying for their last nickel. But that's capitalism, isn't it? You can't afford it. Yeah, screw you. You're dead. It doesn't matter to me. Capitalism is Volkswagen taking the time and money to figure out a way to cheat on emissions tests and pour poison into your atmosphere to maximize their profit. Capitalism is Carly Fiorina wrecking one company, moving on to HB, wrecking that company, and being paid $100 million to go away. And then running on her record as a business person, while David Brooks goes, ooh, she's so good.
And no one has hired her since HP.
No, nobody.
Except for ABC News this week.
Well, and except for McCain and Romney as economic advisors. And you can see where that went.
Yeah.
One other thing I would like to point out about David Brooks. And this is, again, I don't want to dwell on it, but since I forced you to bring the subject up. in the same response, in the same area, this is what happens. And this is true of Chris Matthews and David Brooks and all the rest of the people who cover the news. They all live in a gated community together. They all live behind the ivied walls of the Beltway, where the real world never really intrudes. And the ugliness, they live at the big house on the plantation. And they don't really take any time to find out how the people in the fields are being treated.
Yeah.
But I want you to keep that in mind. David Brooks is a Republican. He has made his professional bones carrying water for the Republican Party and the conservative movement in this country since he was in his 30s. And that's how he makes his living. And now Donald Trump, who is the embodiment of that movement that he does not want to see and refuses to see when it stares him right in the face and writes away and pushes away and whitewashes over and pretends that it ain't there because it offends his sensibility.
Just like he pretends that Rush Limbaugh isn't there. Right. I don't know what Rush Limbaugh says. He's constantly saying, I don't know what Rush Limbaugh says. Yeah, right.
He makes a living pretending the Republican Party is not full of Republicans.
Right. Right.
And suddenly Donald Trump is there. And he's doing
the front
really
runner.
Well.
Yeah.
And so Mr. Brooks writes, you would hope that everybody in this day and age has sort of a bigotry response, that when somebody says something clearly bigoted, like Muslims are a problem in this country, that you have a response. The response is one of visceral disgust. And you would hope that you would hear something said about African Americans, Latinos, blacks, women, whatever group it is. And he didn't have that response. He's talking about Donald Trump not shutting down the
bigot. No one trained Donald Trump to have a sentence, right, a soundbite that you say when somebody goes crazy on you.
Right.
Right.
Here's the problem. David Brooks has been working actively for a party of racists and demagogues for the last 30 years.
Right.
And he goddamn well knows it. And if he ever quit that movement or that party, no one would give him a job parking cars at a Motel 6. So he has to keep pretending that it ain't there. His bigotry response only kicks in when somebody kicks in the door of his gated community and shoves it right in his face.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's offended. But he really doesn't want to know what's going on down in the fields, out in the country, out where real people live. Because if he actually had to face that, he'd be horrified. So he just writes about this fictional America where the Republican Party isn't really Republican. The conservatives aren't really conservatives. And Rush Limbaugh doesn't exist. And Phyllis Schlafly was never there. And the virtue of Donald Trump is that, and Carly Fiorina as sort of his paired opposite, is that the ugly world of ugly people who believe horrible things that has been the Republican Party rocket fuel David Brooks' entire life is now in his backyard. And he is desperately flopping around, trying to figure out a way to explain away the fact that Donald Trump exists in the world.
And he can't do it.
No, he can't do it. Because Donald Trump exists in the same world where Volkswagen cheats for money.
Mm-hmm.
Where someone
That's just decent businessmen doing the decent businessman exactly. thing. That's not... Right, right. Drift Glass, I just sent you an email.
Uh-huh.
Can you open it? Can you go open it?
Nothing's arrived yet. Oh, there it is. Oh, God.
I think this is podcastable on topic.
Breaking news.
Breaking news from Variety.
Wait a minute. Wasn't this breaking news a week ago?
It was two weeks ago and then 2 weeks before that and 2 weeks before that.
So let's all guess what it could possibly be.
Donald Trump and Roger Ailes to meet to iron out differences.
Oh,
Mommy and Daddy are going to couples counseling.
Again. You know, I think we should just run reruns.
Yeah. Of our podcast?
Of our podcast.
Let's see what happens.
Because it's not that it's reached the point where the news isn't bad anymore. It's just absurd.
Yeah.
It really, I mean, you said it best. This is the world we live in. It was written by Kurt Vonnegut.
Yeah.
This is ludicrous. This is just the fact that these people, this is reported as news.
Yep.
Is, I don't know. I don't know what to make of it anymore. Because there's, I make fun of people who say, call these people out.
Yeah.
Because call them out to who?
Who?
It's 2015. Yeah. Who the hell doesn't know that Roger Ailes is a fucking fascist? Who doesn't know that? Who doesn't know that Donald Trump is a scumbag? Who hasn't already formed their opinions? So looking with alarm at this sort of thing was boring 10 years ago.
Yeah.
What's left for us to do as liberals, and I must cop to the fact I've been very depressed this week.
Yeah.
It's because the news isn't news anymore.
Yeah.
The news is a circus run by hirelings of corporations. And the most important story of my adult lifetime is the one story they won't talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And it's killing us.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't matter what we do or how hard we pound the desk or how many times we're right. Well, you know the thing that knocked me off balance this week? Can I say that?
Sure.
It wasn't Donald Trump and it wasn't Ben Carson yapping about the Big Bang Theory and how it was made up by Satan and promoted by highfalutin scientists, says a neurosurgeon, which is just, again, so ridiculous, even Kurt Vonnegut wouldn't have written it.
No.
The thing that knocked me out of orbit slightly was Amy Holmes.
Who is from Glenn Beck's organization, right? She's a Glenn Beck type.
She's a Glenn Beck employee at The Blaze, who is now a regular contributor to Up.
Up. With Steve Kornacki,
And her quote of the week was, sure, birtherism was awful, but Barack Obama did it too.
And that's not even the line. I mean, that was going really over the line, and David Korn sort of just lost it at that, threw up his arms, like, wow, you're really going there.
But Barack
the line
Obama,
is that Hillary Clinton started birtherism.
Well, that's number one. But number two, she tried to run out the line that Barack Obama also played on birtherism because he was profiting from it because it was good for him because I don't know what good for his ratings.
You know, and Martin Luther King was really, his career was helped by all the racism.
Oh, yeah.
You know, well, it really was. So, you know.
And here is an African-American woman who works for, of a certain age,
mm-hmm.
who's perky and good on camera, who works for one of the worst demagogues in modern American history.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing that really just made it taste like I'd bitten into a rotten persimmon
mm-hmm.
was I've given up on the Sunday shows.
Mm-hmm.
They are just a dumpster fire. They're They're atrocious. Morning Joe, I don't watch it anymore. I watch the Twitter.
We read the hate tweets.
It's, you know, when you look at, okay, look, it's Ron Fournier and Mark Halperin and Nicole Wallace circle jerking over what an awful person Hillary is for the 55th time in
every
a row.
Morning.
Every single
morning.
And then we're going to have Donald Trump call in and talk about what a jerk Carly Fiorina. And that's the news for 3 hours, now 4 hours, every day. There was a time, 2006, 2007, when liberals got a seat at the table.
Yep.
When things were so bad, when the Bush lies were collapsing so fast that the establishment really was rocked on its heels. They didn't know what to do. Because all the people they'd been having on for the last 5 years turned out to be insanely bad liars.
But you know what I think about that, Driftglass? Yeah. Is that they expected that the liberals that would come on television would obey their rules. Because it's television and you'll make money and you'll be famous. Yeah. And if you just play by our rules and are nice to everybody and say both sides, then we'll have a liberal voice on television. And it'll be great. But the liberals that came on, you know, Marcos didn't play nice.
No.
And there was too much truth on Up with Chris Hayes.
When they started filling the panel up with American Enterprise hacks.
Yeah.
And Alec hacks. Yeah. And other right-wing.
The Blaze.
Think tank.
Yeah.
And then on comes Amy Holmes from the Blaze.
Mm-hmm.
Who sits at the table where there used to be intelligent people once upon a time. And says Barack Obama is every bit as guilty as birtherism because he did it because it helped him out with his, it was profitable for him to do so. He played that card just as much as Donald Trump did.
Uh-huh.
And with a sure and certain knowledge that this, let's see, what's a good word for this sort of person that won't make people mad? lying Gorgon, perhaps?
Yeah.
We'll be back. She'll be back next week and the week after that. There'll be no penalty to pay for that. And what sunk in has been hovering for a while. Sunk in was how far back we are sliding. How much, how there's no media left. There's no place left.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter the world's on fire. Doesn't matter that we're right about everything. Doesn't matter that we can point to facts and figures and charts and polls and say, here's where you're getting it wrong. None of that matters. We are not welcome on the Sunday shows. We're not welcome at our own quote-unquote liberal network, which is being handed away piece by piece to the same people who fucked up the world in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
it's a sense of, and I wrote a post about this comparing it to Flowers for Algernon.
Yes.
Where we are sliding backwards. We can watch, we're watching our media get dumber and more dangerous every day based on people who will not talk to us, who will not communicate with us, who will not acknowledge we even exist. And it just gets worse and worse every day. For some reason, this one stung.
Mm-hmm.
Because the fucking Glenn Beck employee is now a regular member of your liberal television on Saturday morning, who no matter how fucking crazy she is, or no matter how much bile, lying bullshit she slides across the table, she will always be welcome back, offered a chair, asked if she'd like a pastry. And treated like a normal person, and that's.
I want to switch gears for just a minute and just talk about salvation.
Yeah, that's boy, is that appropriate? Thank you, Bluegill.
Because Kim Davis says she's been washed clean.
Yeah.
And Scott Walker's God changed his mind and gave him a different form of leadership, which was to quit the race.
And encourage others to quit too.
And to encourage others to quit. That's leadership.
That is.
And Ben Carson modified his comments about a Muslim is unqualified to be president. He said it's because they don't believe in separation of church and state.
Sure.
And that was my moment of just, are you fucking kidding me? Are you crazy? I gagged.
I know.
Starved laughing at that point. And Eric Fernstrom decided to take to the Twitter.
Who you might remember.
He was Mr. Etch-a-Sketch in the Romney campaign. As I said, the problem with this country is every third-rate, second-place GOP former campaign manager thinks he's somebody.
Mm-hmm. Well, Eric, and this is John Fugel saying, ask this question.
Yeah, yeah.
That really did derail the Romney campaign because Eric Fernstrom told the truth, accidentally told the truth.
Which is, we're going to say one thing during the primary season to get the crazies to vote for us, and then we're going to have to pivot. Right, we're going to have to become sane again
to get the center
to win a general election.
So we're going to have to shake the Etch-a-Sketch. So we're going to tell the crazies whatever the fuck they need to hear to vote for us.
Right.
And then we'll shake the Etch-a-Sketch and we'll do something entirely different because that's how politics works.
Right.
And it turned out that was the insight.
You said out loud what you're just supposed to say over drinks at some bar someplace, right?
You're not supposed to admit the truth
to a donor
about how your party treats its crazy base.
I do think Eric Fernstrom thought for a moment that he was talking to some country club Republican donor.
Yeah.
Like, oh, no, we're just going to say all this stuff to get in.
Well, and how, but and this is the point. Now, this is
yeah. And you were going to add Trump to this mix as well.
Yeah. Well, and here's why. Because this tidal wave of crazy of Trump just back on birtherism,
mm-hmm.
and Eric Fernstrom back writing editorials for newspapers. And what's the trap door? What's the they trap themselves in a corner and they always paint themselves a trap door to sneak out of.
Mm-hmm.
It's always the same door. It's always both-siderism.
Yeah.
So Donald Trump is caught once again, not even dog whistling anymore. It's like it's like a steamboat whistle. It's as clear as can be what he's doing. And because our media cannot form their mouths to form the words, oh, the reason this works is the Republican Party is full of fucking bitches.
Racists, yeah.
On purpose.
Yep.
They're there for a reason. But you can't say that because someone 5 tiers up from you at Comcast or whoever owns your company will fire you for saying that. So we can't say that. So what do? Well, we have to bring on someone. We have to both cider everything. We have to protect Donald Trump's lies at all costs. We have to protect Eric Fernstrom's continued longevity as a writer of editorial. So what do? Eric Fernstrom explains that really Donald Trump is half the problem. But the other half is, you know, we've talked a lot about how Donald Trump is the fringe. We need to bring the fringe under control on the right. But we haven't talked enough about the fringe on the left. And that was printed in an American newspaper for some reason. And the reason we know this, frankly, is 10 grain.
Yeah, yeah.
Because we have a little army of people out there who send us articles and notes and mentions on television because it's once you start noticing how both-siderism has become the default explanation for letting conservative bigots off the hook, you see it everywhere. It mm-hmm. is everywhere. And so when Donald Trump starts running the racism back up the flagpole, the response is, how can this ridiculous, vulgar asshole get away with this shit? The response from conservatives is, well, Hillary was the first birther. So, you know, this is both sides.
Yep.
And Amy Holmes is invited to up to try out a different brand of the same lie, which is, you know, Barack Obama pretty much went along with that because it profited him, too. So really both sides. And honestly, if you outlawed both sides, if you outlawed the both-siderist argument tomorrow, you would eliminate 99 out of 100 pundits in the world. They'd be gone because that's literally all they do. It's all Ron Fournier does. It's all David Brooks does anymore. Is whatever the atrocity is today, somehow, somewhere, some hippie did something wrong. Therefore, really, it's everybody's fault.
Yep.
And it's that simple. And the maddening part is seeing it happen in front of you and not being able to reach through the screen and grab Ron Fournier by the lapel and pound his fucking face into the desk until he stops lying. And it's maddening not to have a bouncer there to drag them away. It's maddening not to have a fact checker there. But since the journalists have given up the job of journalism, since they don't believe it's their job to check on facts anymore, and anybody can get away with anything, except, of course, telling the truth, because that's not allowed, we're stuck with a constant both-siderist parade every week,
yep.
and which is reported to us diligently by our army of goons and strangers.
Mm-hmm. There's an article Greg Sargent has this week in Washington Post about what if the Republican base agrees with Ben Carson.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he puts it that way to be just asking the question.
Uh-huh.
And then he answers the question in his article, which is, hell yes, they agree. And the campaign manager in Iowa for Carson was asked about this. You know, aren't people disturbed? Isn't the Republican leadership disturbed that your candidate is making really Islamophobic statements? It's polling great in Iowa. We're
exactly.
doing fine.
Why would it bother them?
No. And so Greg Sargent goes through poll numbers to say, look, a full 60% of Republicans say they view Islam unfavorably. A majority of Republicans want to secure the border and deport all immigrants who are already here. You know, illegals, right? No, it's people that are not white and don't speak English that you want to get rid of, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I love this part, quoting a Times report. The debate over Islam is particularly worrisome for Republican leaders because it so vividly highlights the vacuum that has been created by the absence of a unifying leader who can temper the impulses of the rank and file. That's
wow.
That is such beltway speak.
Wow.
What we really need is a leader who can temper the rank and file. You guys created this monster.
Well, this is why liberals are not allowed on television.
Nope.
And this is what we've been saying all along, which is the Republican Party has a radioactive core that powers everything, and then a thin veneer of civility that they present to the world.
Yep.
And now the core is breaking through.
Mm-hmm.
And all you hear from the people in the Beltway who want to keep their jobs in Washington, in the media, who believe it is their job to protect that status quo at all costs, only see the problem as one of marketing.
Mm-hmm.
If we could just slap another coat of paint over the crazies, if we could just get them back in the basement, if we could just get them back in the attic, then everything would be fine. It's not the fact that they exist that's the problem. The fact that we've bred this monster. The fact is the monster is off the treadmill now.
But it's like Fukushima. No, the radioactivity is now in the ocean.
No, we'll put a coat of fresh paint on it.
It'll be fine.
And a flag pin. It'll be fine. And here's the thing. The hedge fund manager, whose name is Martin Shkreli, I believe I have that right. The thing that's adorable about him is that he really doesn't see what the problem
he
is.
He doesn't. He's just
letting people die.
Yeah, yeah.
It baffles him. Why anybody cares? What I'm doing is legal. This is capitalism. I'm gonna get rich.
And nobody is really gonna die by not paying for this drug. Everyone will pay because if you don't, you'll die.
He honestly doesn't understand why this is a problem. The culture in which he was raised, the awful parents he must have had, who have turned this monster loose on the world, trained him at some point that the problems of other people dying for you to make a profit is somebody else's problem, not mine. This is not a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what's fascinating about watching the people who are trying to market the Republican monster back into the box. The monster is not the problem. People dying for lack of this drug is not the problem. The marketing is the problem. And the people who are breaking through, the people, the Trump people, the Carson people, who don't believe in the Big Bang Theory, who believe all Muslims are out to kill us, who believe that there are Muslim training camps probably run by FEMA all over the country, who believe in Sharia law, cannot understand why their party isn't applauding them when they stand up in public and say this.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they've been trained that this is all acceptable.
This is truth.
This
What's
is all truth.
Yes,
I
yes,
heard
yes.
it on Rush and on Fox.
Yeah, it must be true.
And they don't understand why everyone's ashamed of the fact that they're... Because these are two members of the tribe that rub shit in its hair.
Right, but Donald Trump is providing that tribe with an open acknowledgement that they are right.
And
you're going to win.
They're fucking patriots is what they are.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that is really killing the creatures of the Beltway.
Yeah.
Because their whole profession depends on pretending that the countryside beyond their walls is not on fire.
Yep.
And
guess what? It is.
And guess what? It is.
And here's your nominee.
And the fire is breaching your wall. And they don't have any mechanism. They don't have no internal mechanism for saying Martin Shkreli is a bad person.
Yeah, yeah.
They have no mechanism for saying the Republican Party is crazy and full of bad people. They cannot say that. They've been trained by their paychecks, by their bosses, by the corporations that own them. You can never, ever, ever say that. And so the one way they could raise the alarm for the problem that is confronting our country is the one thing they are not allowed to do. And now the fire has reached their backyard, and they don't know what to do about it.
Well, and I want to take that one step further and say the number of things that they're not allowed to say are the things that the Pope and Bernie Sanders are saying.
Oh, perfect. Yeah, absolutely. Talk a little bit more.
They're not allowed to say that it is our responsibility to take care of the poor. It's not that it is our responsibility to take care of the environment. We have a job to do, and here you are not doing it. And you are failing to be good people because you do not pay attention to anything but greed. His statement about the war machine and funding, I mean, that was the part where I went, oh, yeah, everybody's just going to walk away from that because we need to stop arms deals. Mm-hmm. Who are the number one and number two arms dealers in the world right now? U.S. Mm-hmm. and Israel.
Yeah.
That's because of money. Blood-soaked money, the Pope called it.
Uh-huh.
And nobody, this is I'm talking to you, Dick Cheney.
Right.
You know, this is really what's going on. And this is the thing that people whose shows are sponsored by defense contractors uh-huh. will never say.
No.
And that's something that's just going to be, I guarantee you, across the entire weekend, that is something that will never be mentioned on any of the talk shows. Oh, let's yeah. talk about the arms race, the arms deals. Let's talk about how we can reduce that. No one's going to bring that up at all. Thank you, Drift Glass.
Sure, Blue Gal.
Each week, we post to our Facebook page and website an internet kitty sent in by you, the listeners. This week's internet kitty is Felix. Of course, Felix the cat. Drift Glass, Felix the cat likes a cardboard box bed with bubble wrap in it.
Oh, my God, really? That's an innovation.
Yeah, Michael sent Felix's picture to us, and Michael says, Felix is a much welcome guest in my home while his human travels for the next 3 months. Oh. But Michael says, Felix has proved so beguiling, I don't think my friend's going to get Felix back.
Sorry.
And Felix besides, Felix now has a cardboard box bed with bubble wrap in it. Right. So, you know, it's all good. You can send your internet kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We do love hearing from you. Be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air unless you say otherwise. Don't forget our gourmet coffee guideline. If you can afford to buy an espresso-based beverage for yourself, buy one for us. And don't forget our Amazon link at our website. We're up to about $300, Drift Glass, in Amazon money for that didn't cost our listeners anything.
Don't cost nothing.
And the children have suggested that they would like new winter coats with that money. And that's a really good idea. So.
Screw them.
Well, middle child said, you know, you have that money. It would be good if we could get winter coats. And I went, oh, come on.
Come on, we have bubble wrap. Come on.
And then she said, and you have to understand, she's just, I know I'm her mother. She's just the prettiest young lady that there is. But she's, of course, she's 13. And she said, I wanted to get a coat that's got a black hood and is two sizes too big so it looks emo.
Yeah, no, that's not gonna happen.
I want a big black coat. You know, she wants Mr. Robot. That's what she wants. She wants to be invisible from space.
Well, I know the perfect coat for her, and I know where to get it.
What?
So.
Oh, you do?
A pea coat.
Yeah, but she wants a hood.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
A pea coat with a hoodie underneath it is.
Yeah, that'd work. That'd work. Anyway, don't forget our Amazon link. We believe in buying local, but we also believe in shopping Amazon with our link if your alternative is a big box store. Approximately 1% of our listeners support this podcast with an actual contribution, and you can too. See our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, for details. Both our PayPal and postal address information is there at professionalleft.blogspot.com. Drift Glass, we've also gotten a couple packages in the mail. We got a 30th anniversary science fiction magazine a couple of weeks ago. I wanted to mention for our 300th episode.
Yeah.
They sent us this science fiction magazine that was celebrating their 30th anniversary in like 1963 or 64.
Uh-huh.
And it had predictions for the next 30 years from all these people. It was really cool. Appreciate that. And then this week we got a gorgeous heavy box.
Uh-huh.
And they told us that the person that sent it emailed us and said, there's woodworking in here. And I thought, okay, what could it be? And we opened it up and there is this gorgeous pair of little benches, folding benches that were handmade by one of our listeners. And the story of the wood that went into this set of benches, it came from ships in Vancouver, Washington. It was being discarded off of ships. And so it is Southeast Asian in origin,
mm-hmm.
very hard wood. And he found it by buying it off of people who were selling it, but
salvaging it, and selling it,
right, and was able to get longer pieces from them. And this person does a lot of work at thrift shops and for the homeless, and really is a very gifted woodworker. And these are just a piece of engineering. They fold flat, and
they're gorgeous,
high gloss. They're really lacquered. They'll be weatherproof, and they're sturdy, and they'll last a lifetime and probably our children's lifetimes. And we just treasure them. And thank you so much for making those for us. We deeply, deeply appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
Please rate our show on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. And thank you for doing that. We appreciate your reviews.
I want to do a shout out to Terry mm-hmm. in Tokyo. Terry sent me an email. Terry is an old Steve Gilliard fan.
Oh.
Who is a member of the expat community in Tokyo, along with a couple of other Gilliard fans from years gone by, who all of whom I met in person at the Netroots Nation in Chicago. And every now and then they get in touch. One of them gets in touch, or some of them don't. Some group of them do. And I got a note from Terry saying she's a big fan of the podcast.
Cool.
She'd heard of us. She's catching up. She's going to become a contributor, I believe, which is awesome. And there's other stuff in there. I want to let Terry know I will email you back in the future. I promise.
He's been too depressed lately to write to you, but he will.
But it was good hearing from you, and it's good hearing from people from the old days. And
The Steve Gilliard days. I mean, that was when you started your blog. Steve Gilliard kicked you out of his blog.
He did.
You were totally in the comments section. He said, no, you need to write your own blog. Stop this.
Yep.
Stop hanging out at my place and get your own shingle, right?
Fine. And look what it's led to.
And the rest was history. All right. Hey, Drift Class, how are the Internet Kitties doing this week?
Oh, Blue Gal, the Internet Kitties are forced to confess that those rainbow Doritos make them a little gassy.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-dovin'. Let's forget about the whine and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with a switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Love Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2015, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
Science Fiction University Dogfaced Herman has sent us another wonderful collection of clips, Driftglass.
Yes, Blue Gal.
You are to name the movie and then answer the question, what could go wrong?
Ooh, pretty much everything. Well, okay. What could possibly go wrong is the source of all drama.
That's right. That really is it. Uh-huh. You don't have a plot unless something could possibly go wrong, right?
The plot is find the girl. The dilemma is what could go wrong?
What could go wrong?
Boom. Boom. Only $100. That's my introduction to basic plot, literature.
Plot. Yes,
changes
writing plot. It's
a class at the Learning Annex. So.
Plot schmott. Write about mothers and daughters. Remember, the novels of Belva Plain. All right.
Boom. That's your 201 credit.
And today's
right there.
My friend Mark from college. Today's his birthday. Happy birthday, Mark.
Happy birthday, Mark.
And he's the one who said that. Plot schmott. Write about mothers and daughters.
I tell you what, one day we'll do an entire show on anecdotes we picked up in writing courses.
That's right. Wouldn't that be great?
That'd be kind of fun, actually. I would enjoy doing that.
All the lawyers in the 80s who were in my writing seminars wanting to become the next, you know.
Grisham?
Yeah, John Grisham. Yeah. All right.
Okay.
Name the movie and answer the question. What could go wrong? Number one.
I would like to scan all of you in this room one at a time. I must remind you that the scanning experience is usually a painful one, sometimes resulting in nosebleeds, earaches, stomach cramps, nausea, sometimes other symptoms of a similar nature. There's a doctor present, Dr. Gatineau. I know that you've all been prepared for this, but I thought I'd just remind you just the same. There is one other thing. No one is to leave this room once the demonstration has begun. At this point, I'd like to call for volunteers.
Oh, that would be Scanners.
Scanners. Oh, David Cronenberg. Yes.
These goddamn Canadians, I tell you.
I know.
They're horrifying people. Really, you get to know them. They're just awful. Awful people.
Well, what could possibly go wrong?
Explodey heads.
That's true.
I believe David Cronenberg mastered the how to make a head explode on screen technology almost before everyone else.
I think he did. And he did that without a lot of CGI, because this was 1981.
No, this was, I believe, shotgun. Mm-hmm. Tied to something or other, like a watermelon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so.
And kaboom.
Boom. But yes.
All right.
Yes. That heads exploding, pretty bad.
I gotta say, some of these clips are pretty funny. This one in particular, I think, is funny. Number two.
Before I open the floor, I'd like you all to meet your brand new security team, the Protector 101 series robots. 1 week from tonight, at closing, the Protectors will begin their patrol of the mall, each assigned to one of the three upper shopping levels. Now, are there any questions?
So what do your machines there do besides kill criminals?
Well, first of all, Doctor, the Protectors do not kill.
I wonder if they kill cockroaches.
They could probably be programmed to.
They merely detain intruders until the computer located on the roof can patch into the mall phone system and send an alarm to the police. Protectors can achieve this function in a number of ways. At close range, sleep darts fired from here and here can knock a man out in less than 30 seconds. However, the likelihood of an intruder gating entry is greatly minimized by the steel security doors, which are time-locked from midnight till dawn.
They seem so violent. If they're called protectors, what do they protect?
Plenty. For starters, as seen in the film, the protectors do their work in the mall proper, not in the stores themselves.
Maybe we could use one at the restaurant. Get rid of people we don't like.
I have no idea the name of the movie.
Uh-huh. What could go wrong, Driftblast?
Based on my intuitive understanding of the genre and the subtleties and intricacies of plot development in science fiction and horror, I would say robots go berserk and start murdering customers
of the mall.
Things like that. Probably.
Yep.
Probably. Yeah.
You
that's
probably rewrite.
Uh-huh.
This is a movie from 1986 called, are you ready for this, Driftblast?
I'm ready. I'm braced.
Chopping Mall.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Man, who said the 80s sucked? No, they didn't. They had great movies like this.
This
one
is clearly a RoboCop ripoff. And the mall is struck by lightning and a surge of electricity causes the robots to become, as you predicted, sentient bloodthirsty killers.
Oh, see, I didn't predict sentient. I guess it must have been one of those special bolts of lightning that causes intelligence.
With the sentient part of it, yeah. Extra points if you can identify, in this clip, Paul Bartel and Mary Woronov. They reprised their characters Paul and Mary Bland of Eating Raoul.
I could not.
I could not do that either, but you know what?
No.
I did see Eating Raoul, not a bad movie. Okay.
No points for me.
Number three.
What's the matter with him, Mommy?
Well, we were trying to make Jack a little more like Jill and Jill a little more like Jack so they wouldn't keep having such large families.
You simply can't shoot them full of hormones without setting their nervous system into shock. It can mean months developing the right lab procedure. Well, nothing seems to work. On the other hand, here's something I know they've never been exposed to before. Dr. Dirksen from the Public Health Department sent it over this morning. Would you give me a clean rabbit?
Oh, yeah.
I wish I knew what the effects of this serum would be. Let's hope it works.
Not that one, Mommy. It's my favorite.
Apparently, this is the villain. In certain birth defects, causes hereditary changes.
Will it transmit to other rabbits?
Well, I should hope so. Difficult to inject 10 to 15,000 wild rabbits.
Right.
Now, this substance, if we could affect the blood of 50 rabbits, it wouldn't take long for this change to take place in the entire population.
Oh, my God. I actually know this damn
thing. Oh, really?
In fact,
wow.
I know more about this movie than you would imagine.
Oh, okay. Well, what is it?
This is the classic Night of the Lepus.
You are correct.
Which I saw.
Night of the Lepus, 1972. How did you know that?
My parents were divorced, and I watched a lot of television when I was at my dad's.
Uh-huh.
He was busy doing whatever the hell he was doing. And I'm sure I saw this on rerun on a crappy black and white television somewhere in the suburbs of Chicago in the late 70s. I'm positive of that. However, you might be more familiar with it as a movie that's playing in the background of another science fiction movie. And since there is a long lag between me asking questions and me getting answers from our audience, I will just jump to the punchline. It's playing in the background, I believe, in The Matrix. It's running in the background of one of the scenes.
Giant rabbits.
Yep. Giant rabbits.
On the TV screen. I do know this, yes. The spoon bending scene.
Wampaging. Wampaging wabbits.
Wampaging wabbits. During the scene, there is no spoon scene.
Uh-huh. In
the TV's running.
Because there's nothing more terrifying than giant rabbits. It's giant rabbits in slow motion.
So what could possibly go wrong is giant rabbits.
Giant rabbits. I told you it was dangerous. I told you it was dangerous. But no.
You and Dogface Herman, your brains went in exactly the same direction. He said, killer rabbits don't work for me unless they're eating Knights of the Round Table. Yeah, yes,
come on. There's only one other killer rabbit.
Monty Python killer rabbit, yes. All right, number four.
I want you to dream peace on Earth. No more war. No more mass killings of humans by other humans. No more fighting in Asia, Africa, the Middle East, or anywhere in the world. Antwerp.
That is The Lathe of Heaven on PBS in this country. Also in the late 70s, I think. Late 70s, early 80s.
How do you know that?
Because it's awesome. it was on
your drift glass. I don't understand how you know these movies.
it's a little short novella by Ursula Le Guin.
Oh, for heaven's sakes.
And it was on, there was a really brief but wonderful golden age of sort of television produced, probably BBC or Canadian Broadcasting produced science fiction going on late 70s or early 80s. Mm-hmm. And they did this one, they did like Overdrawn at the Memory Bank, which I think was John Varley. And a few others. And this was wonderful because it's a wonderful little story. Our protagonist has what I believe were called effective dreams. And whatever he dreams turns out to be real.
Mm-hmm.
Except the problem being that when he dreams that history is different than it was, he's the only person that remembers it. So everyone thinks he's crazy.
Oh.
So his therapist, he's ultimately sent to a therapist and forced to be shrunk.
Mm-hmm.
And turns out his therapist believes him. And his therapist keeps trying to make him dream of things that will make the world a better place. Actually, the therapist just wants the power for himself. He keeps dreaming for like better facilities and bigger offices and all kinds of shit like that. But every time he dreams of something ending global population problems,
uh-huh.
He dreams of a plague that wipes out a quarter of the human race or something like that. So, yeah, it works.
That's a clever writing trope.
It is.
Because it really is that what could go wrong.
Everything.
World peace. What Everything. Could go wrong, yeah. right?
And world and, peace is an invasion by aliens. That
yeah, so all of a sudden everybody gets along really well because aliens are attacking the world. Yes.
But at least in the movie, as I recall, it ends on a Beatles song. And it's like in a little curio shop. And the aliens are there and the people are there. They're all sort of getting along. So they're this mishmash of his dreams and a reality have become reality.
Wow.
And it's a very interesting story. There was a lot of fertile science fiction coming out of the 70s.
Mm-hmm. And well, this is 1980, yeah. And Lathe of Heaven. We'll have to check that out. All right, last one, number five.
You all know the purpose, our target, is the magma. If we can succeed in bringing this molten mass to the surface under controlled conditions, we'll have all the energy we could use. All the electricity for all kinds of industries. Now, we've drilled down to this point. The only thing that stands between us now and success is this thin layer. Nevertheless, that thin layer has held us up for 17 weeks. No drill that exists will bore through it. Not the toughest steel nor the hardest diamond. Conventional explosives are useless.
What do you mean conventional explosives are useless?
I mean, there are other types. I was thinking of a thermonuclear device. The United States Defense Department has made available to us a missile capable of delivering a blast effect of 10 megatons, which is enough, in our opinion, to break through this last barrier between us and success.
And you asked us here to give you permission to fire it?
Yes.
Are you as sure of this project's success as you seem to be of our permission? Isn't there some risk involved?
I have no idea. I'm guessing, like, the Vulcan something when exploding thermonuclear devices under the Earth's crust go wrong.
Could go wrong with the exploding device under the crust? Yeah.
I'm guessing the problem is blowing the world up because,
And this movie is called Crack in the World.
Yeah.
So they didn't go with something poetic like Lathe of Heaven. Yeah. They just called it Crack in the World.
What? This was Dr. Evil's plot, as I recall, from Goldmember,
mm-hmm.
or whatever it was. You know, he's going to fire a missile into the Earth's core and destroy everything.
Everything.
Cause volcanoes to erupt all over the place. So, yeah, there was just a lot of stupid ideas.
This was 1965, so not exactly a golden age for science fiction horror, although it kind of was some respects.
I'm not sure when exactly, but in that between 65 and between Crack in the World and Lathe of Heaven, somewhere in there, the Forbin Project.
Yeah.
Colossus, the Forbin
good
Project
movie.
Was a wonderful project. Now, I'm not sure if the Crack in the World, there was a movie around this time where a crack is caused, some sort of fissure, and the split line along the globe is like, it's like tearing across the globe slowly.
Oh.
And they can figure out where the two cracks are going to join up, and they have to do something clever to stop it.
Oh, neat.
I think. I don't know. There's absolutely no science involved in any of this. Other than thermonuclear weapons do, in fact, go boom, and you can drill into the Earth's core. But they do make for lovely Saturday night viewing fare when you're kind of a nerdy teenager with no social life.
No social life.
Yeah.
Hey, thanks, Dogface Herman. This was excellent.
Yeah, thanks, Dogface. Appreciate it.
And you've got a couple that I didn't think you would get.
Yeah, that's why I am. That's why they call it Science Fiction University.
University, yeah. Hey, and then we had a question. This is from Paul, one of our listeners named Paul.
Hey, Paul.
He has an essay question for you.
Oh, a pop quiz on a Thursday when the Pope's in town?
What? I know,
what?
Really.
What? Okay.
He's asking about influential science fiction again. He thinks that Star Trek may have had a bigger cultural influence than Atlas Shrugged.
Maybe.
Although the latter perhaps more so among the wealthy political class. He would like to ask you, what works and authors you would recommend as good progressive genre as opposed to Atlas Shrugged? His standouts are Ian M. Banks, good. Ken MacLeod, Ursula Le Guin, Sherry Tepper, and China Meville.
I've probably read half of those, so I'm not going to comment on anybody I haven't read. I would dig out Spider Robinson.
Oh, yeah.
I would dig out the collection of short stories by Spider Robinson. I would dig out Stardance by Spider Robinson, and I'd start there. Go to get yourself a Callahan's book, Callahan's Saloon book. He wrote three or four collections of short stories, which is a tale told in a bar is about as old a literary device as you're ever going to find.
Yep.
But there was this real explosion of very humanitarian, humane, hopeful science fiction.
Which is really ironic because he had kind of a tough life.
He's had a very tough life. He's lost a lot of people he loves dearly, wife and children, I believe both to cancer. And he's living up in Canada. And you can still look him up and he's still, you know, plugging along doing his thing. And he writes a lot about pain. And how to redeem that. And he writes a lot about, a lot of them are science fiction tricks. He's a very good writer. And he writes, his works are up and down. I'd recommend Stardance.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd recommend grabbing a Callahan's Cross Time Saloon story. Ah. Which are just full, Callahan's Saloon is the story of a place, I believe in upstate New York. I'm pretty sure. I'm not sure exactly where. Because you can't find it unless you need to. And it's where wounded souls go to be healed.
Ah.
People gather there, and there's regulars, and there's travelers. And you meet time travelers and aliens and conquering heroes and villains and all kinds of people. And many, many an apocalyptic destruction of the human race has been stopped at Callahan's Cross Time Saloon by the application of good sense, good company, and good whiskey. And I just think that's charming as an idea that this little place exists somewhere out there. And it's full of good people who save the world every day.
I believe that in Quantum Leap, at the end of the series Quantum Leap, they wind up in a bar named Callahan's.
I wouldn't bet against that. I wouldn't surprise me if they ended up at Callahan's having a shot and a beer.
I would add to that list Margaret Atwood's books, Oryx and Crake, which is a book about environmentalism and genetic engineering, which has some very funny scenes in it. But she is so prescient in predicting the future of biogenetic engineering that it gets a little scary.
Yeah.
She's not quite politically correct on Palestinian issues. But that doesn't come up in her books. So far that I've seen.
Octavia Butler. I
was going to say the Octavia's Brood book has a lot of authors that we've talked about that before that are science fiction from social justice movements. So that's a book to check out.
Go read some old Harlan Ellison. Harlan Ellison. Harlan Ellison short stories from the 70s, 60s and 70s.
Yeah, short stories are good because it's not a huge commitment and you can get a lot out of them. So
cruise through really fast and just pick a handful. Pick the best of. A lot of them are best of. Santa Claus versus Spider is an unremembered gem. Jeff D is Five is about progress and how that can hurt people. Paladin of the Lost Hour. That's a sweet story. That's a lovely story. And if you can get the new Twilight Zone episode that was made into a new Twilight Zone episode with Danny Kaye in one of his last or possibly his last role on television. It is a sweet story about saving the world.
Okay.
And the burden of saving the world. Yeah, there you go. There's a whole bunch.
There you go.
There's a weekend reading for you. Spider Robinson, pick up any Callahan's book and Star Dance, and Margaret Atwood. And then
Oryx and Crake is a good one. And then if you want to get, there's a whole series of Margaret Atwood feminist books that, obviously start with Handmaid's Tale and go from there. Yeah.
And grab Paladin of the Lost Hour and any other couple of other Harlan Ellison ones for humanitarian, not happy stories necessarily.
No.
But stories of how to be a human on Earth.
All right.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week.
A pleasure.
Yeah. Thank you again, Dogfeast Herman.
Yeah. I love you, Blue Gal.
I love you too, Driftglass. Bye.
Bye.